Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the iPad, put the earbuds in your ears, and listen to another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob.
How are you, buddy?
I'm good.
You're good?
I'm good. I'm excited about our guest. I thought I lived across the street from her, but apparently I didn't.
One of the surrogates. This is Marina Anderson. Now, Marina, I'm going to give just a brief overview. She's a writer, producer, actor. She's been throughout all working in Hollywood for a while. But one of the things we're really talking about here is she was married to Dr. David Carradine for 6 years, written a book about that. Is it just called David Carradine?
David Carradine, The Eye of My Tornado.
The Eye of My
Eye
Tornado.
Eye of My Tornado.
Yeah, and so David had
colorful
stuff we like talking about, you and I. Did you know that about him, Bob?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So I lived across the street from him in 91, 92, 93. And on the other side of so in one neighborhood, Drew, in three houses within six houses was Ricky Rocket from Poison in his prime.
Using.
And David Carradine and me.
Oh,
and
boy.
And Gibby was living at my house.
Oh, Jesus. How did that whole block that burn down?
Those poor other neighbors.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I could imagine.
So, but David had a long alcohol history, right?
He did.
And then that sort of settled down and other stuff kicked in.
Yeah. Unbeknownst to me until I talked to you, and it was like, oh my God.
Well, you started writing the book before he passed away, right?
I actually started writing notes, and I had letters that I compiled, and I thought, I'm not going to throw this away. And I had this stack of stuff, and then I was thinking of writing a book because it was more of a venting and a self-help thing. Mm-hmm. And then when he passed away, I felt like I had more of a mission to cover certain territory.
Was it a surprise when he died?
It was a surprise. How he died,
which was
well, they said autoerotic asphyxiation, which I didn't buy that, which meant he would be by himself, solo, and like a suicidal thing. And I thought,
well, it's not suicidal. The opiate addicts do it all the time.
Yeah,
all
well, by accident, by kind accident, of a thing. Yeah. And something just didn't ring true to me. Mm.
So somebody was there with him, and they covered it up and left.
That's
what I thought too. Just so
I investigated.
He was
the whole
tied
thing.
Up in other ways too, right?
Yeah, it wasn't logically like how could he tie the hands in front?
But it was
and
in Thailand
like
or something, so they're not doing
Bangkok,
the most
Thailand.
Due diligence.
Yeah,
right.
You know what I mean?
No, when it's autoerotic, it's usually bed or floor, low like a bedpost or a doorknob, rope. The rope is like the robe. Like your robe, you know, clothing sort of scan, that kind of stuff. It's not elaborate.
Right.
It's just very, very, you know, sort of.
But he led a wild life and he.
He always walked the line between. Yeah. He defied rules and regulations and authority.
Just so you know, you're talking about, you know, musicians living around him and we're all in awe of him. We'd watch him get in his little car and we'd think like.
Which car?
There's
Ferrari?
Kung Fu. It's an old car, like an old vintage car. And we just look out our window like,
he loved
there's
his cars.
Kung Fu. There's the dude from Kung Fu right there. Mm-hmm. And it carried this air of what I later learned once I got sober and started to become enlightened, an air of spirituality and mysticism and all this. It's all just a junkie hustle, really. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, it's to cover up what that you haven't healed your inner demons. I did it too, eventually, years later. That you're seeking solutions in these weird spiritual ways, ignoring the fact that you're a trauma survivor, you're an addict, you manipulate people, you're dishonest emotionally to people. You're just covering all that up by meditating a lot.
Right.
Right?
You know,
is that
he wasn't one to meditate.
What was all the spiritual aura about
that
him?
That was his character, Kwai Cheng Kane.
But he did it in real life.
He did martial arts, but he wouldn't sit there and zen out and meditate. No,
he carried an air about him of that.
Well, that's what people perceived. I mean, that was
no, but he walked
not
a certain
him.
Way, and he. I remember watching him like that. Dude is so cool.
Because he was thinking, on LSD. I mean, it was like,
that's the point.
I remember. Yeah. So he's probably what? How old was he in 1992?
God, I have to do the calculation. He was born in 1936. So
he's 50.
36.
He's 1936.
He's 56.
Yeah.
So I'm 31. And he's 56, and I remember thinking, that's what I want to be like when I'm fucking old.
Oh, boy.
Right?
Yeah.
So he's a role model for the next the generation of train wrecks.
What did you experience married to him?
It was a roller coaster.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just high, low, and then once in a while a nice plateau of, oh, this is great, and then chaos would hit.
Was he a depressed type?
He would get kind of morose moods. It was hard to get him excited about something, and then he would go kind of manic and like super excited about something. Hmm. He hit the self-destruct button a lot, and it was hard to manage.
Sounds like he's using it the whole time.
He might have been. I know that while the time we were together, he did get off of the alcohol, mm-hmm. definitely. But to get off of it cold turkey like he did, he couldn't do that when we were living in Canada. But when we were together, he did. And later I thought, oh, well, that's great motivation. And he just did it. But I put together later that he was probably taking the edge off with some painkillers and stuff because they were always around. We always had various plastic surgeries going on and dental stuff. And he had the painkillers.
Oh, if they're around, they're being used.
Did
he
do LSD a lot?
Not when we were together at all. He was at nothing like that. No, that was like during Kung Fu. He said he would lace his you know, Coca-Cola or something with a little LSD
take
when
LSD
he was doing the show.
He's filming. Mm. I mean, just as an addict, that is pretty badass. Mm. I'm sorry.
You like that, huh?
I admire that.
It's a little low-dose LSD. Wow.
A microdose, it's called nowadays.
Well,
he's prescribing microdoses to people.
I'm not prescribing, I'm exploring it.
He's exploring it.
Goodness. Yeah, the trip, you know, Laurel Canyon, that infamous thing that was in the news, and he was on LSD, and you know, he took mushrooms and things like that. That was part of his lifestyle. But when we were together, none of that.
Mm. Well, the opiates are very, very serious. I mean, that's a big problem.
But he's one of the only second-generation show business people to have independent success from his father, away from. You know, and I always admired that, too, because, you know, most second-generation show business people are train wrecks. He was still successful and a train wreck, right?
A semi-train wreck at particular times. I mean, in general, I wouldn't call him a train wreck.
What was it?
I don't classify him as a train wreck at all, actually.
Well, he's a hurricane.
He's a tornado. He loved the challenge. He loved to see, you know, people react to what he was doing. And
Give an example.
He found fun in it.
Give an example.
Oh, goodness. It's hard for me to think of an
with
example
with a movie
right now.
Executive. Give an example.
With a movie executive?
Yeah. Did he fuck with them?
Well, he told me when he got the role for Kung Fu, they asked him to do something, and he said, no fucking way. And he started to walk out the door, and evidently he got the role. But I don't know if that's really true or if he just was just, you know, exaggerating on something. But I thought, well, it sounds like him. I'll believe that one.
So who would he cause the tornado stuff the
people
with.
Around him, me. I mean, it was just he didn't want to take responsibility for most anything. I made the phone calls. I mean, people, you know, just it was a hurricane. It was a tornado around him.
And would and he yell would just, at you for not doing it right or
not
something?
Not so much yell, but he was kind of passive aggressive. You know, he just wouldn't do it. And I said, well, if you don't make the phone call, you know, we're not going to get this and this leads to that and that. And then I would have to do everything.
We call that enabling.
Yes, I was
when
definitely
you, when
an
you
enabler.
Step in and the hurricane we call the tornado we call a vortex.
That's what it felt like.
Every addict has enablers, and every addict causes a vortex, and everyone gets sucked into it.
Yep, and I felt myself burning out, and it finally got to a point where
sounds like full blown opiate addiction. Hmm. Sounds like it was really really going.
Yeah, well, there were times, and I wrote about this when I talked to you. I couldn't wake him up. He would sleep through people pounding on the door, phone calls, alarm clocks, and
that's
just
Xanax.
Other various things
that's
just
that's
didn't
benzos.
Make sense.
Benzo with.
Were the benzodiazepines around? Xanax, Valium, Ambien, Lunesta.
We had Valium.
Okay. Well, that's that with the opiate is a life-threatening combination.
Oh.
So he was in danger all the time.
Goodness.
But the Valium.
Yeah. Percocets, I remember, Vicodin for various surgeries and stuff. So we had that. But I never thought of going to the cabin and counting any of it.
Would he wake up at night and take another sleeping pill because he couldn't get back? He had to get back to sleep.
I never saw him taking any pills unless we had a he had a dental problem or something, and it was.
How do you go to sleep?
He would just stay up until like 5 a.m, and I'd be asleep, and then he would eventually go to bed. So
that's drugs.
Wouldn't see anything. say. So
that's drug addict stuff. Full on. Yeah, so he was in trouble. He was in trouble. And he died how long after you left?
Well, we separated in 2001, and he passed away in 2009.
That's so pretty good that he made it that long. Jesus, yeah. In that kind of trouble.
But he went back to the drinking within, I'd say, 3 months after we separated. Mm. So he was full on into the drinking that
That's
I know
better.
Of.
That's better. But he probably, but in order to compensate for the opiates, he probably had to take a lot of alcohol. Was it way
it
up there?
It sounded like it from reports. And we ran into each other a couple times, and I could smell alcohol on his breath. Yeah. So, and it was sad to me.
It's very,
it always very sad, is sad
that he went back to that.
For us, that's better. I mean, it's less imminently dangerous.
But I don't know what else he was on.
But to get
on.
The same, once they graduate to opiates, to get the same replacement, the alcohol, it's way up here. The alcohol needs a lot more.
Unless you just integrate them.
Well, use them together. Yeah, you can use them together.
The sleeping thing just makes me suspicious. The typical thing is somebody's takes benzodiazepine to go to sleep. Eventually, after 6 months of that working, you'll wake up and the addict in you will say, just take another Valium. And that's why then you would sleep through anything, because you have this buildup of benzodiazepine in your system, at least two.
He probably would do that at 5 in the morning. That's probably when he'd get going with it. Take it during the night and then take the final dose at 5A.
And then at 8 in the morning when you're trying to wake him up for a call, he's not going to answer.
Oh, he would be so pissed off at me. And it's like, no, you have an interview at 11 o'clock. We got to get going. And he would just – he would start screaming and then
– Terrible.
It was bad.
Now, the asphyxiation stuff, no, that's all opiate addicts do that. That's the only way they can feel satisfaction is with that.
Well, that was from the beginning. I mean, I knew that was what he was, experimenting with, but I didn't know it was his meat and potatoes kind of a thing.
Well, yeah, because they just don't feel satisfaction with the opiates prevent that, so they have to go. And even when they come off the opiates, oftentimes they still gravitate to that.
So the ante keeps going up and up and up.
It's not that. They can't feel it. They literally don't feel satisfied, don't feel the normal. Some of it is when they're off the drugs, it's need that high. But a lot of it is they just don't feel the reward, don't feel the satisfaction. The opiates screw that all up. So it's
most
tough.
Of the time, but here's the strange thing. Most opiates just don't have sex, right? They just don't. So
The pill addicts do. You're talking about
David was definitely
always sex. Always.
Yeah, always. It was. He even joked about like every 20 seconds. He said, "Men think about sex every 20 seconds," and that's pretty much really
that's,
what
that
he,
was his
yeah,
schedule.
Yeah,
yeah.
He
what are you thinking?
Definitely not.
Well, the opiates would
it.
Reduce that.
Yeah, maybe some of the pills sometimes not so much though. You're thinking of shooting heroin.
About the kids. I deal with oxycodone kids. They've been OxyContin since they were 16. They've never had sex.
Yeah.
The drugs are the sex.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
Right? So he maybe wasn't that pronounced, but I'm suspecting there was stimulants, there was Viagra, there was all kinds of stuff. It just
his stimulant really was espresso.
Yeah. Oh.
I mean, mega.
How much? A lot.
Oh, yeah. Triple, quadruple, it's espresso.
There you go.
And then it's Coca-Cola.
That'll get you motivated. Plus, you got to pee a lot and whatever.
And the Coca-Cola.
No, I'm trying to put this picture together
because
what you're describing, I suspected, but also this kind of seeking of some sort of solution. And what I'm getting from you is he was kind of unaware that any of this was abnormal.
There wasn't anything abnormal that he thought about it at all.
Well, it's a very, very high level of narcissism.
Including the incest. I mean, he didn't think that was abnormal at all either.
Right.
So
he was sexually abused. That's where the sex addiction comes from.
So he left in 2001, right?
Right.
So he had a niece, Martha, right?
I believe. His niece is Martha,
Her boyfriend died of a drug overdose in 1993. He didn't register with him. Hey, drugs might be dangerous or bad. What was his take? You know, what did he ever say about River and Martha and all that?
Just that it was a tragedy. I mean, he didn't comment.
They didn't know how to use. You know what I mean? That's how a good narcissistic drug addict thinks, right? The second alcoholics, they know how to drink.
She doesn't like when we criticize him, right?
But that's
I'm
the way
saying,
it works.
I wondered.
That's the way it was. It's just I'm countering because that didn't apply to him.
It didn't. Nothing applied to him?
No. He was just very sympathetic to what she went through and to the death of a young, talented person.
Yeah. Basically. But he didn't relate it that that... There was never an idea like I'm susceptible to something like
no,
that. Never.
Never. Mm-mm.
That's pretty no. compartmentalized or a pretty good actor.
Well, no, compartmentalized because he compartmentalized the sexual abuse too, right? So he was severely sexually abused. Done. Narcissism on top of that.
Well,
feelings.
He perpetrated the incest too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
That's like Mackenzie.
In terms of with her dad?
Yeah.
What do you mean perpetrated the incest? What does that mean?
He had sex with a family member.
Oof.
And in the book, I talk about it, but I don't reveal who or the gender or anything to protect the person.
But how old was he when that happened?
But that had a profound impact on our relationship and the marriage throughout the whole thing. Although I knew in the beginning, but I thought that was part of my healing journey.
How old was he when he did that?
Because I was abused by my uncle.
So that's why you're attracted to somebody like that.
Well, I was.
Yeah, that's why you were attracted.
He breaks the cycle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
But so he was abused as a kid, and then he
abused.
He abused.
Yeah.
Okay. That's some rough stuff.
That is.
You know, Mackenzie came to me when she had written her book.
Mackenzie
she was
Phillips.
On our
yes,
show.
Yes, I've met her several times. I'm sure and we've talked
sure,
intensely,
right?
Yes.
I told her, are you ready for what's about to happen to you? Because this is going to make so many people so angry. Mm-hmm. They're going to attack you. They're going to blame you. They're going to make you the sick one, not your father.
Mm. Right.
And she said, no, they won't.
Oh,
it's going to be with Oprah.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't give a fuck.
By my
what
writing about
Oprah.
It, I got...
Mm. Oh, yeah, you're going to get...
Not so much by the major public, but by certain
family.
People.
Family, right?
It was not.
It's rough.
Yeah. Oh, I actually, the family didn't directly react to me. I have yet to talk to them about it. Actually.
No, they don't usually talk in these
but
days.
They're not talking to me, so I, you know.
Yeah.
I'm guessing. You know.
There's a lot of idealization of people that fit these kinds of profiles. So you either. You know, and again, there. I imagine there's within the family.
May I say, none of us want to believe this shit, and we don't want to talk
about
it. See,
that's the thing.
Right. Imagine if you're in the family. You know what I mean?
Well, you put the person on a pedestal, and you don't want to see the person fall off the pedestal.
That's right.
But he's a person. He's a human being. We all have our faults and everything, and that was one of the things that he had a darkness. And I thought I could work on it with him. I wanted to fix it, and I learned I can't fix everybody or everything. I got to work on myself.
Right.
So it was a part of the package, and they accepted him the way he was because there are definitely certain people who knew. And
that,
so
that he was a perpetrator.
Yeah.
Phew.
Yeah.
And do we know that he perpetrated him against non-family members?
Pardon?
Did he perpetrate on non-family members?
Not that I'm aware of.
You know?
Not that I'm aware
That's
of.
Very heavy stuff.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, and it goes on all the time.
Right,
it goes on in El Monte and Whittier and Calexico, all across the United States.
And people are still
and nobody
to step
wants
forward.
To talk about it. Nobody
about
wants to talk about it.
Right,
I've been talking about it for 30 years. What are you talking
but
about?
But the you get crucified for talking about it a lot of times.
People don't
want to hear about it, though it's prevalent in our society.
Talking about sexual abuse of
children. Yeah, sexual abuse of
children. We went through an epidemic of it, and now it's settling down a little bit.
I think it's an epidemic now, and we don't even know the magnitude of
it. Well,
if
that's true, we got bigger problems than I think. Because I feel like the awareness, because when I used to talk in the 90s, when it was really out of control, and it was really bad. 80s, 90s particularly, I'd say. And then there was a lot of child-on-child perpetration because the children were so free, you know, so affected by the adults and hypersexual. And then this thing was roaring out of control. And then I remember when I would talk about it, people would go, oh, that's always happened. We're just more aware of it now. It's like, no, it's happening at an extraordinary rate. And I think the 70s is where it blew up. That's because, hey, man, whatever you're into – well, that's what I'm into.
The free love.
Yeah,
thing
that's where it got going. Mm-hmm. And
well,
I think
he was
it took
a poster child for that, right?
He was a poster child for what?
He believed in that free love.
The free
and
love.
The hippies.
He never put it that way, but David was pretty loosey goosey.
Yeah. You just got the sense.
I mean, a lot of it's in his autobiography, so he wrote about a lot of it. So I think it's just a natural thing for people not to want to – they don't want to believe the bad about somebody, especially if they respect them or love them or something. It's
what
just
if
a
you
natural
understand,
reaction.
What if we stop labeling it bad and just start to understand that there is abuse? It traumatizes the people involved.
Right.
And it leads to what I'm always...
Sometimes it can lead to...
To perpetration.
Yes.
All the time it leads to addiction, eating disorders, suicide.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
You can't abuse a child and expect they just lived happily
no,
ever after.
No,
that you know what
happens.
I mean?
Well, I in my case, with my, as you put it, my uncle, a molestation, was a sexual abuse light.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, I had anger management problem in a way, but I didn't know it, and I didn't really express
right.
it.
Right, so you get what's called emotional affect dysregulation. So kids that are sexually abused get dysregulated, and they start to act out in their relationships by either becoming the perp or becoming, going after perps. They become attracted to people.
Well, that was, there was that mysterious darkness about David that it was like, ooh, what's that? Dive into it.
And so because we are perfect instruments, our emotional landscapes, that if you're attracted, you know that's that guy.
Right.
If you feel lightning bolts, it's that guy. Because that's what gets wired into your head after the abuse.
And it's from my consultation with you when I said that epiphany. Mm-hmm. Now it's like I can sense that, and it's not being attracted to it, I am now revolted by it.
Oh, good.
It's like, boing.
Yeah, good. Well, that's good.
Yeah, so that's a major, major...
That's a big change.
Change for me, yes.
Good for you.
Yes. Well, thank you for that.
No, it usually doesn't happen with just awareness. Usually you have to kind of really... usually kind of stays, actually. You usually have to just go, oh, I'm aware I'm attracted. I'm aware what that means.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go for somebody less exciting.
Right.
Because what that means is that guy's...
Danger. Yeah. Warning.
So... What I'm always hoping that we can do, because why do we write these books? Why do we talk about this stuff? Is to educate and help people become aware. So when you identify that your young daughter, tweener, teen, was sexually abused, you need to be educated on what is to come. What are the signs and symptoms to come? What are the proper treatments and therapies
the tools
instead
to know what
of
to do.
Ignoring it.
Well,
that's
people
why
do. People don't want to
don't
think
want
to about
deal
it.
With
they just close it down. Like, that did not happen. Let's never. She's
been
fine.
There, done, well,
she's
been,
fine.
Well, a lot of people nowadays are doing, they'll sit down and talk with the girl and have a 2-hour conversation. And
she's fine.
And she's fine. And then been there, done that. Oh, no, we talked with her. It's all fine. And we're, you know,
well,
instead of concrete ideas of how what to expect.
The problem
you
also
can always expect addiction, my opinion.
Oh yeah. The problem also, though, is that oftentimes the women that have children that are sexually abused, that woman herself had been sexually abused, and she often brings the guy in that is the perpetrator. Because remember, she's attracted
to
those kinds of guys, and the fact that that's happened again is so shattering.
And that's why I think it's predominant.
They just close it down.
That's why I think it's more predominant now. Okay, so you have multiple levels, multiple families, divorces and children who aren't related to each other, growing up together as siblings, all this kind of stuff. I think it's going on a lot more. You're talking about the 70s, 80s, and 90s in Los Angeles and New York and San Francisco.
Yeah.
I'm talking about 2018 in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Yeah, maybe.
I think a lot of times also people don't know how to emotionally deal with it. In my case, I complained to my parents about my uncle.
Oh, my gosh.
And what did they say?
Well, they said, we'll talk to Uncle Al. And then he would still
the
corner
pal,
me.
Yeah. Uncle Al.
corner me and stuff. And then finally, it was I figured, because it was my dad's brother, my mom finally stepped in and supposedly had a talk with him. And he cornered me and said, you tattled on me. And now I'm pissed at you. And I was just like, I was terrified. And I was finally at an age then when I could just not be around when Uncle Al was there. So fast forward years later, talking to my mother again about it, and she felt horribly guilty that she could not get him to stop, or they didn't ostracize him from the house.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't know how to deal with it, and she felt horrible about that. But we had a healing. I mean, we talked about it, and not just that one time, several times, and it was really difficult
you and
for
she.
Her to... Yeah.
Had she been abused?
She never told me she was abused. I think there was her brother who threatened her at some point or something, and she did talk about that, but not that he actually did anything.
What did he threaten her with?
Well, I could F you if I wanted to, kind of a...
That's not... That is
power.
That is sexual. That is
power.
A form of sexual abuse.
Well,
most
people wouldn't think that it is. It just has to be
certainly the Me Too movement would not miss that one.
Yes.
You understand?
Yes.
That's and they're pretty astute to these things.
Right. And I think she had PTSD. I have severe PTSD.
From Al or from others?
No, I don't think it was from that. No, it was from something that was published about me I was with David, and it was horrible. And I just, from that moment on, it was just, not the same.
Sorry. I mean, now that's the world we live in, where everybody gets attacked every day.
Yeah. Well, we did something about it legally, but it did damage to me. So, I go into kind of depressions and things like that, and the self-worth kind of creeps up every once in a while.
That stinks. Do you have an opinion about the mob, the way it behaves these days, what we should do about it?
The mob?
The social media mob.
What are we talking about? Oh, the media mob.
that's just destroying people's lives and careers every day.
Oh, it just gets out of hand. I mean, with the internet, you have no control.
Yeah.
And it's a big problem. It's a big, I do publicity for people. I mean,
people just get some casual accusations ruin people's livelihoods.
Right. And it's so, there's no checks or balances with it. They just take a thought or a rumor and they run with it, and it's out there forever on the internet. Well, and there's no getting really.
I think the traditional media has a responsibility, and this is what I don't
They
like.
Do have a responsibility, but they don't take it.
They're just, I don't want to.
There's too much money and attention and publicity
that
they want.
Well, they report Twitter. Right now, I'm a big basketball fan. LeBron James is going to announce whether he stays in Cleveland or leaves and comes to L.A. He's coming to L.A. is what Drew says, right? So at this point, he's brought a championship to Cleveland. There's not many people in Cleveland are going to be that upset about it. They expect it. They see it coming. It happened the first time it hurt. He came back. Changed the city's landscape, and he wants to win. I think most Cleveland Ohioans are going to be cool with it. But a handful or 1,000 or 2,000 are not going to be. And they're going to burn his jerseys, and they're going to be upset again.
Yeah.
And the media is going to report that.
Oh, yeah.
Millions of Ohioans are cool with LeBron trying to chase a championship in L.A. But 2,000 of them, they never accurately
portray
what it is.
They glam on to the negativity
always
of things. And it takes 10 times the energy to overcome that or to turn that around in a positive way. And that's what I tried to do when David passed away. It was just all this negative stuff, and I was trying to do some press to divert.
Yeah, he provided a lot of great stuff.
Yes,
a lot of great performances that really changed people's
lives. As a big fan and a neighbor, you want to know my take when I heard about it and what had happened.
Hold
what
on.
They described.
Give it after the break. Be right back. All right, it's summer, and dehydration is a very common problem. Even if you don't even realize it, whether you're exercising, lying on the beach, you can get dehydrated very, very easily. And the proper way to stay hydrated is with adequate balance of sodium, glucose, and water. Hydrolyte does this better than any sports drink, and certainly better than water alone. Understand, water is just water. It doesn't have these solute products in it. Hydrolyte, in fact, is the best oral rehydration I've ever seen. It comes in great flavors like orange, berry, and lemonade, available in a pre-mixed drink, a powder. I like the effervescent tablets. I wanted to invent that myself before Hydrolyte came around. They got there first. Compared to sports drinks, Hydrolyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. Hydrolyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can get Hydrolyte at Rite Aid or at Hydrolyte.com, H-Y-D-R-A-L-Y-T-E, Hydrolyte.com/DRDREW. And for a limited time, our listeners will save 30% of Hydrolyte. It's a great deal. Just click the banner on our website. Use the code DRDREW18 at checkout. That is Hydrolyte.com/DrDrew, and use the code DrDrew18 at checkout. Hydrolyte. We are back. We're with Marina Anderson. Give us the take, Bob.
Okay, so I was a big fan. Of course, grew up with Kung Fu. Then he lives across the street from me. I'm watching out my window to see him walk to his car.
We've heard your word, stalker babe.
I was stalking him. And then I hear this weird Thailand death thing, and I was just like, that's a shame.
Yeah.
Because he was a great man. And it's just an embarrassing kind of, you know.
Right. It was embarrassing.
It was just embarrassing. And it's just such a shame. Yeah. Right? And I think millions of people felt that way. But you heard from the 2,000 people that wanted to degrade somebody. And you know what I mean? And I just, it's so awful, our culture, what it does.
It is. Yes. When I investigated, I talked to the Thailand police. I talked to their coroner. I got the autopsy report. And the things in there, I do not believe he was by himself. I don't believe it was autoerotic. I believe someone else was there with him.
Yeah.
But the kicker for me is I think it was intentional. because of what was in the autopsy report, and a certain bone was broken, and that's done with a lot of force.
Was the hyoid broken?
I believe that's what it was. I'll have to look
larynx,
at it.
The
not
fractures,
the larynx,
the,
no,
the
some other bone in there, yeah.
So you think somebody, karate guy, some weirdo people killed him?
That's one of my theories, you know. Motivation,
I never thought
of
robbery. Could have just been robbery.
Could have been.
I mean, just doing it forcefully enough that you kill the guy and rob him. It's Thailand.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
even though that's kind of what he was into, the strangulation sort of scenario.
Yeah, but you bring a criminal in, like a prostitute or whatever, and
another
country, and this guy,
right?
What do they get to lose?
And the surveillance footage will never surface because the file is closed now in Thailand, and that's it. Done.
Mm.
We will never know.
That's sad.
So, yeah, I was very upset about that. Yeah.
You know, even a contemporary of his, and I don't know if you knew Hunter, but Hunter S. Thompson, even his thing was just sad. Like, he was sick and he shot himself in the head or something. And just that generation of outlaws ended this kind
rebel
of weird
outlaw, yeah.
Yeah, and then.
And David was.
And he was one of them. Mm-hmm. Dennis Hopper ended up, his family fighting over his paintings.
Peter Fonda's been behaving strangely lately.
Huh?
Peter Fonda's been behaving strangely lately.
Yeah, what the hell was that about?
It seemed like...
a little drunk on the morning news?
Yeah.
I missed that.
But you know what I'm saying? All these titans that really brought a lot of great stuff and did a lot of great things, mm-hmm. to just... In the end, that outlaw thing doesn't have a pretty ending, is what I've learned from that.
Right.
Yeah.
There's
But still, for him to be labeled in the press with that, I just thought was just so wrong and inaccurate. And because what gets lost in the shuffle is all his wonderful work and everything. And especially when I think that it was on purpose, and we can't get an investigation to get that information.
It feels a sense of lack of justice.
Yeah, exactly. Lack of justice.
Well, don't feel like it's Thailand. So a friend of mine was murdered here in the 80s. I was just on this show, My Favorite Murder or whatever podcast. A friend of mine got murdered in 81.
I'm so sorry.
We all kind of knew who did it, but it's a tight-knit punk rock community that's kind of scared of each other. Now the guy that we thought did it died, so they're doing this 10-part podcast series about it, and I was on it yesterday. And the L.A. Police Department, because I said, well, how come the police didn't interview David Jove, this guy that we all thought killed him? He goes, well, and he had the police report. In the police report, they found 2 days later a black guy who had fallen off the roof of a building and said, this is probably the guy who killed the guy in the other loft.
God.
Because it was a black guy in the neighborhood burglarizing.
Oh, my God.
So even if it happened in L.A., you might get the same police work that you got in Thailand.
Terrible.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're just incompetent.
I think they're on overload.
Yeah, they're too busy.
Just
sweep it over here.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering, do you feel like we've learned, you could teach somebody something from David's life and your relationship with him?
I hope so. With what I wrote in the book, I hope so. From what I went through, I learned a lot about myself in the sense that I cannot fix someone. Even with the alcohol, they say, oh, you got him off alcohol. No, I didn't. I provided a motivation or some more motivation for him to do that. But you can't force someone to do something they don't want to do.
No.
And that was a big learning curve for me. So if anything to take away from the book or anything, that would be a gem for people to get from
it. Do you talk about how he compartmentalized his stuff? Again, I'm thinking about all the
dark. I don't, because I didn't really, we're talking about that here. I went, oh, interesting. I didn't think about that.
I remember talking to you about his narcissism, which is a way of staying way and above all that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
rules
like,
don't apply.
I'm a bigger than
life.
Rules didn't apply
to him.
Feelings don't apply in many circumstances. I'm way up here with all kinds of...
No, he was in his own world. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
But he was a part of a whole generation that thought like that. That generation of the 70s that you don't like so much.
Defy authority. It's, the rebelness.
Well, it's funny.
Totally.
It's funny. I'm laughing at myself for a second here because I'm just thinking to myself, yeah, Bob's right. I don't feel that way right now. I thought, oh, my God, the reason I don't feel that negative right now is that whole defy authority group was really trying to cast off the yoke of a previous generation and establish. They had freedom.
Establishment.
But freedom was their priority, and I kind of admire that now, because now tolerance is the priority, and there's now intolerance in the name of tolerance.
Yeah.
We would force you to be tolerant. That's the opposite of freedom. Right. And so I'm much more sympathetic to your characters now, the guys you like. Isn't that funny? I was thinking, why don't you?
Because I grew up idolizing them, right? I was born in 61. I was that prime demographic of Led Zeppelin and Kung Fu.
Zeppelin I got issues with. The way they treated women, they should be extradited and put in prison. That's a different thing.
Well, so anyways, see, I knew I'd stir him up somehow.
Led Zeppelin. Goody two-shoes. And what I got from David was like, I'm going to defy authority. Why should I just walk that line?
Well, he gets to act it out on your behalf. You because you're the goody two-shoes, you don't get to do that. He does it for you.
Yeah. But I've learned to do more of it in
on
my own behalf.
It's fun, but it was fun, right? If you've been doing everything the right way, like example, like I have this friend that's kind of like that, and he does the world doesn't really exist to him. He just goes where he's supposed to go, and nobody stops him because he's got power and money or whatever.
Yeah.
It's this guy in Las Vegas. He just walks right to the front. There can be eight people waiting in a restaurant. He'll walk right to the front and just start walking to an open table. Like there are
sounds
no
like David.
That's the point. That's the point.
Yeah. There are no rules. It's evocative to be around people that are that.
Yeah, it's fun.
However, around his, I call it peers, I mean, you know, major A-list stars, he was so intimidated and felt not worthy and not
well, because
a part
that's
of that.
That's always underneath the narcissism. And so if he can't keep the narcissistic bubble pumped up, something pierces it all the way down.
Wow.
And so the bigger the people that he really thought had stature made him feel down.
Mm-hmm.
It pierced the bubble a little bit.
Wow. Yeah. It was a definite lack of
that's
self-worth.
Interesting.
What was his relationship with his dad?
Well, I asked him. I asked him once. I said, "How did you resolve your issues with your father?" He said, "He died."
Oh boy!
So his dad seemed like a hard ass.
Yeah.
Well, dysfunctional. I mean,
still
alcohol.
Still the Guinness Book of World Records for most movie appearances. I believe his dad
could be. I just honestly, I did not really ever hear really great things
did
about
he beat
the
him?
Father. No, he never told me that he beat him. I think it was rather of emotional absence and neglect, because he went off and left the boys. And actually, David acted kind of like the father figure for the brothers.
Mm.
So
I did hear that somewhere. In fact, I talked to him once, David, I think about it. I interviewed him on radio, I think.
Could be.
That subject came up.
Probably
somehow.
Over Kill Bill or something.
Something. I can't remember now, but I'd forgotten that. Yeah, I think I did talk to him once. And that something
he
about
was
his,
the glue that held
yeah,
the,
he did
the brothers
talk about
together.
That.
Yeah. I mean, they're all still tight now, but I mean, David was really, that father figure.
So you grew up.
The father really wasn't present.
You were in the
for
center of the tornado, and you grew up in this town, and you see this town and whatever, and there's something happening right now in this outlaw culture, the last outlaw culture in Hollywood.
Which is, who's that?
Which is Quentin Tarantino, and they're making a movie about the Manson family. Mm. And I don't think we need a movie about the Manson family.
Ooh.
Do you know this?
Well, I'll tell you the
Leonardo's in it. Everybody's in it.
The only reason I think it might be of use is if they talk about how people get hoodwinked by horrible people.
I would expect Quentin would have a component of that.
Like, let's get the Beach Boys story to me, that house when the Beach Boys are hanging out there. That part of the story
would be interesting.
That'd be an important part to tell. And
I've told you that story. My mom was there. Terry Melcher, his name was. Terry Melcher was a producer. He's Doris Day's son.
Yep.
He was a record producer of the Beach Boys. Dennis Wilson comes to him and goes, "I got the greatest guy," right? And everybody's hippies and love and girls.
But that's the part.
And
that
Terry Melcher, who was pretty sharp, intuitive, normal person to a certain extent, not on crazy drugs like Dennis Wilson, thought, "I don't know about this guy."
Yeah.
Right? Terry Melcher went so far as to move out of his house that he knew Manson knew where he lived. That's the Cello Drive house. That's why Manson killed Roman Polanski, Sharon Tate.
Yeah.
Terry Melcher was so smart. Like, I don't want him to know where I live.
But
that's
crazy. But I want to.
And they're going to make a movie about this. What?
But I hope to portray the bullshit that people sort of laid on top of Manson. In other words, all the people.
I'll do you one better. what you're trying to say is there are followers of a certain president.
Followers of all kinds of things now, including the mob. The mob on social media, I would argue they do the same damn thing. They decide something is a certain way, and that's just the way it is, no matter how distorted their beliefs are. That's what I want the exploration to be.
That there's
distorted beliefs.
Individual,
autonomy.
Autonomy,
yes.
And thinking,
yes.
Like, I don't know about this.
Yes.
Terry Melcher had that.
As opposed to deluding yourself, yeah, man, we got to get...
But those traumatized girls didn't have that.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And Manson manipulated all that. I think we're getting manipulated by more Mansons all the time. If he can somehow, but I don't know that we need another movie about Charles Manson.
Yeah.
I think it glorifies.
Well, it's so disturbing. I'm sure Tarantino will do an incredible job, but the subject is just so disturbing.
Hey, we have a couple of emails I got to get to. Do you mind?
Yeah, yeah.
No, go ahead.
A friend looking for an alternative to Alcoholics Anonymous. They don't like the higher power thing.
Smart recovery.
We are both support this. Yeah, there's actually women's programs now that are mutually.
Not rational recovery or moderation recovery.
No, not moderation.
Smart recovery,
smart,
it's called.
But even rational recovery, you know, if you want to look into it. I mean,
they're more angry at rational recovery. God, now I'm going to get crucified by the rational recovery.
But to be fair, the higher... If they're objecting to the higher,
you can't win.
If they're objecting to a concept that there's something bigger than themselves in the world, that's somebody who may not be ready for sobriety yet. Let's see, reaching out, attempt to get into rehab, but I've been having trouble. Reach out to many places, no luck. My drug of choice is opiates. Since age 13, I'm now 29.
Where are they at?
It does not say, and it's I can't do it. It's a female. It looks like very difficult. This gets back to the question of harm avoidance versus not. I mean, would it be okay to get her on Suboxone, get her detoxed?
Probably already is.
Yeah.
Probably. I don't think you could be an opiate addict in America and not be offered harm reduction by now.
How about go to an NA meeting and just raise your hand and say, where is there good help nearby?
Yeah. Or you can go to the social services department. You can call the health and human services department.
Department of mental health.
Yeah.
Yep. Children's father is suffering from mental illness. He went to rehab a couple weeks ago, walked away from his job, home, everything. I don't know what to do. Everyone has disowned him. Oh, need more information. You said he went to treatment, went to rehab. So she should contact the treatment, find his treating professional, and report what's going on. Because they're actually still responsible for him. So
yeah, and you've got to keep the children safe. I think that we've made it so acceptable that drug addicts are human beings and they need to be treated with dignity. Mm-hmm. No, children come first. And they mentioned that there's children in the home, right? In that.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah, you got to keep your kids safe. You can't have a guy taking drugs and drunk and running around and causing more trauma to his kids. Do you understand, Drew?
Yes. But she's asking, how do I get help for him? And that's... Through
get him
the
out
people.
Of your house.
But block him out, but the people that have been previously responsible for him, she's thinking that they missed some mental illness or something.
I just thought of something. When David was drinking the first time when you were together, what if you locked him out of the house? What would he have done?
Well, he actually gave me his car keys. He said, do not give me the car keys. Whatever you do, don't give me the car keys so I can't go to the bar. And I tried that. Didn't work. Yeah.
You know what you got to do? You got to do what Tammy Wynette did to George Jones. Throw him in the swimming pool.
Here's
that wouldn't have worked.
You know what George did? He jumped right in the pool fully dressed and drove to the bar.
That's right.
So I teach library staffers they must deal with opiate overdoses in their restrooms. So, Bob, in your opinion, I'm providing them with Narcan training to give the nasal spray.
Yeah, but they need – it's fentanyl, and they need two doses. They need double doses.
They also need he says that I discussed –
well, here's –
hang on. I discussed the hazmat issues, the need for gloves, mask, and the risk when the person wakes up in withdrawal.
But I got to tell some people out there, because we are getting Narcan out in the hands of people, but they shoot the person up with one shot of Narcan, and they don't come to, and they go, oh, my God, it didn't work, and they panic, and they don't shoot another one because fentanyl takes two shots. Right? And there's a lot of people dying because – and the people that have the second shot, they just think, oh, my God, we shot him up. It didn't work. And they think that if they shoot him up with a second thing of Narcan, that might be dangerous.
Oh,
and so they get scared.
Yeah, don't worry about
that. Shoot him up with as many until they start breathing.
Yes. And initiate CPR.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that about does it. We really appreciate you joining us. I mean, this looks like
so
a fascinating
much.
Book.
Quick read.
Well, a lot of stuff going on.
It's got pictures in there too. I like that.
It does.
Yeah, it looks like great history in here too.
Yes. Yes.
But it sort of...
A lot about
it,
Hollywood and divorce and relationships.
But it's a real story between two people. I mean, that's the other thing. Yeah. People want celebrities to be somehow different than everybody else.
He's a human being.
He's a big one. He's got a big personality and a lot of stuff going on.
And my consultation with you is verbatim
it's in there.
In
I saw it in
chapter.
There. It's crazy. Yes. I remember where I was down right under this room when you were standing on the phone underneath
that's
here.
Right.
Anything else? Any website or anything you want to refer people to? Or
Well, it's selling on Amazon. You know, people want to read it. It's just it's the new edition. So I'll be sure to get the new one because there's more information
David
in there
Carradine.
For the investigation. And
it's sad that we lost him.
It really is.
It's sad.
Yes.
I mean, all this stuff does not have to happen. And I don't think anybody has to overlay any of this stuff with any degree of shame or guilt. It's just that it's. Humans have these things, and we need to be much more direct and honest and clear and open about all this stuff. So, the I Am My Tornado, David Carradine, Marina Anderson, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
See you next time.
Thank you.
All right, that's about it for this episode of This Life. Check us out at KBCB and Lawrence Avon, 790 Midday Live Talk Radio, Monday to Friday. You can also tune in every day live via the magic of the internet at kbc.com. If you miss it, we've made it simple for you to find all the shows at drdrew.com, the Adam and Dr. Drew podcast, the Single One I Do By Myself, Dr. Drew podcast, This Life, of course, with Bob Swole Patrol, Mike Cantho, at his new health and fitness podcast. You can find us on Twitter at This Life Podcast, at Dr. Drew, D-R-E-W, at Rehab Bob Forrest, and of course, our lovely producer at First Lady of Love. I think I know who that is. If you love this show, please subscribe and tell a friend. We appreciate it when you do. We'd love to hear your feedback as well. Send us a message. Join the email list at drdrew.com, drdrew.com/contact. You'll also get a weekly email from us on that. While you're at it, at doctor.com, please support our sponsors by clicking through the banners. We only advertise products that I can get behind. So thank you for supporting them, those that support us. And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.